Accession number 14975, William Rochester, Reel 5.
Mr. Rochester, Reel 5. Kattrick was, as you were saying, was a much larger camp.
Yes.
And there was more freedom for you there.
Yes. Much more freedom.
In what way was that freedom, you know, what kind of freedom did you have?
Well, you felt free. You didn't have anybody eyeing you all the time. You could get out in your barrack, you'd go for a walk into somebody else's camp. You know, you can walk around and meet make some friends in another camp. You could go to the canteen and make your friends in the canteen. You could go across the road to the shops. You were just like being at home. You know, there's a little bit more discipline than home, but nevertheless, it was very much the same. And you had somebody to not order you about, but tell you what you could do and what you had to do. If there's work to be done, you were told. Get your section out and do this, or the section commander would take you out, and you had a job of work to do, and he just set you on doing the job. And then when you finished, you finished. It was wide open spaces compared to the depot. It's entirely different. I think you found as though you were free. You become an individual. Well, you were never an individual in depot. You belonged to a group. And what the group did, you had to do. Where in Kattrick, you could do things yourself. You could go away and do it yourself. You know. You could even start smoking if you wanted to.
Barrack room duties were basically the same, though.
Basically the same. Each person had a job. And if there was more people than jobs to do, you just changed over every so often. You had a week doing such and such. You didn't do the same. At the depot, you did the same job all the time. All the time at the depot. And I was in the washhouse, and believe me, in the winter it was damn cold. But in the battalion, you did a week or a fortnight doing a particular job. Your job was the floor. You had to make sure the floor was clean when you went out, before everybody went out. So you were going around with a brush, chasing everybody around to get the floor clean. Otherwise, you got kicked for it, rather than anybody else. If it was somebody's bed, it was your fault for not doing it. You might do that for a fortnight. One of the tables, you had a table to do. You'd probably do that for a week or a fortnight. They used to keep changing around, so everybody got a try at everything, you know, rather than one nasty job being stuck to one person or two persons all the time. And it was quite reasonable, I think. It kept the place tidy for you, yeah. And that was it.
Your training or working day, that would start early on the morning,
yeah.
Didn't it?
We used to do PT on the morning, straight away, then go and get breakfast. Then whatever else was on, probably musketry or drill. We still did the drills, which is very important. And we did musketry, and that the same. Then some of us went to school, what after education certificates, we went to school. That was different to the depot altogether.
The school, were these men of the regiment, or were there education corps people?
There was one education corps in charge. In charge of the group, you know.
But, and what were you learning in there?
Regimental history for your third certificate, and then when you got your, if you want to go for your second certificate, you had essays to write, mathematics to do, and you had a book, like just same as the schools had. You had a book, and you had to study that book, and there was questions on the book, and write essays about different parts of the book and things. Oh, and the map reading was brought in for your second. You had to do map reading as well.
It was quite a good standard.
It was quite canny, yes. And you developed after that onto your army first. There was a rumour went round the battalion later on that if you didn't have your army first, you wouldn't be sent away on arms courses, and of course a sergeant would cut somebody's throat to go on a musketry course. He was nothing unless he had a musketry certificate, That was one of the main things to get that. That they used to think that that will get me a promotion, whether it did or not, I don't know. But those, that was the progress through. And your army first was you had a couple of books to study, and you did map reading and essays and that, just the same on the way through.
Did you go in for these?
Yeah.
And how far did you get?
I got them all. I got them in India, actually. I got the second in Katrick, and the third at the depot, second in Katrick, and I didn't have time down here to do it. I wanted to learn all to be a soldier first. Then when I got to India, I had more time to do it, so we went in and we did it in India. And I did my musketry course, and I did a PT course. But the only thing about that was, I'd been away for a physical training course. I went for a 3 weeks athletic course. And I met a lad from Liverpool, we kipped together in the place. And when that was finished, the instructor came up and said, would you like to stop and do a 3 weeks boxing course? Oh, yes, please. And then after that, would you like to do an athletic course? Oh, yes, please. And we had four courses to do. So when they finished that, he said, well, you're finished now, you'll be going back to your battalion. I said, well, can't we have a week's leave before we go? So we had a week's leave at the camp before we went. Then we came back to the battalion. I landed in the battalion 2 days after. There was a musketry section being set up, you know, for courses in the battalion, refresher courses in the battalion. And because I had a certificate as an instructor for musketry, I'd had the 3 months musketry course. I've come back off, 3 months PT? I was full of physical training. I was switched straight on to the musketry course, where I had 2 nights no sleep. To go through my books to get my musketry on before I could go out and instruct. That was typical army, that. But we got through it.
So, training in the morning and schoolwork.
Yeah.
In the afternoon, was this a break, leisure?
I don't think there's any things actually laid down as leisure. If there's something to do, you did it. And if it wasn't on your program, you were free. There was a program for you to do, you know, and you just did that.
So afternoons could be...
Could be free, could be working. You had a program and a training program, and it was up in your barrack room. You knew what you had to do. You could look at it and know what you had to do. And it was no good saying, can I have a day's leave on that day? Because that was a training day, or that was something, somebody was coming to talk to you or something, and you had to be there. So you could work your own time out at the time. It was very good, actually. You could look ahead and see when you could be free and when you could do something you wanted to do, that you weren't sort of scrounging up from something else, you know. The program was there for you. I think that was a Sergeant Major's idea, that mine, because he was good. He looked after us very well. I'm sure it was Sergeant Major Brown called him.
Yeah. So your training then would take you across the next stage from the depot in difficulty. Mm-hmm. Were you marching now farther distances? Were you getting into the route march situation?
Yes. We're marching quite well, 4 or 5 miles, quite easy. And used to say, we try 4 miles the hour this time. So you stepped out a little bit and you had to do, see how far you could get in the hour. Then you had your 10 minutes break. And they could make 4, after you'd been doing it a bit, you could make 4 miles an hour reasonably well and keep it going for about 2 or 3 hours before you got a 20-minute break. You also had a 10-minute break every hour.
That's quite a quick pace to do 4 miles an hour.
Yes, it is. But if you keep your regimental pace, you can do it. Keep it going. And if you get into the swing of it, you know, it's easier to march like that than anywhere. And if you're going up a hill, you go faster. You take a shorter pace and your legs go faster. You do it automatically and you walk up the hill. It's surprising, you know, if you come to a hill yourself and you're walking up the hill, you're struggling to it. And if you're on your own, I still do it. These little banks up here, when I get onto there, I just quicken up a little bit. And it's a lot easier for you. You take a shorter step and you quicken your feet then. And it doesn't pull your body so much. It doesn't make you puff so much.
What were you carrying on these marches?
The majority was just ordinary equipment, ordinary equipment and your rifle. No heavy stuff at all. You took a little bit of, you took your big pack on your back, your haversack, you call it. You took that when you went on training. You had extra shirts, socks, ground sheets, your shaving tackle and washing tackle and all that in your pack. But normally you didn't have that pack on.
Did you need to carry some food with you because of
no.
the length of the march?
No.
It was fitted into the timetable.
Fitted into the timetable, yes. You did on your on the training, of course. You had your food outside. You were away for a month or something like that, you know. And you got your food in a camp.
Marching back from your route march, mm-hmm. wasn't there a quickening of the pace in the last mile or something?
No. No, I don't think so. Not from what I can remember. I don't think so, because they kept a steady march. You didn't do your regimental march all the time. You did it if you were going to try and get your 4 minutes. But normally, it was between the 90 and the 140. It was a steady march. And if the corporal or the sergeant wanted to be back early, he'd come back and tell it. He needn't do a leg, but he used to come back and say, "Are you all fit? We're going to step out a bit. We want to be back in such and such a time." And everybody was all for it. You know, might get one or two, but, come on, we'll do it. And then you used to quicken yourself up then for that. But that was a reason for doing it. Somebody wanted to be in early, so somebody would say, "Hey, lad, I promised such and such, you know, tonight." And I'd go, "Tell the sergeants, and we'll step up a bit." You know, mind, all sergeants wouldn't do that. Don't forget me, you had to have a good one to do it. And we had some good sergeants. We had a good sergeant in the country. Yeah.
Were your feet examined after a long march?
Yes.
This was automatic?
In the barrack room. Mm-hmm. The corporal had to do it. Anybody had a bad foot at all, you had to report. And if nobody reported, you used to say, "Sit down on your bed, feet up. Come on, feet up. Take your things off and just walk past, let you have a look at. There's no blisters or anything on."
Mm-hmm. No form of treatment before you went off, I'm thinking, forms of kind of powder on your feet. I think there's nothing like that.
No.
Just a question.
You got used to doing it yourself. Mm-hmm. Some of the old soldiers would tell you, you know, that you got a lot of information from the old soldiers in your company. You know, you had old soldiers in your section, in your platoon with you as well. You say, "We weren't all new in the platoon. You just fitted in with the old ones," and you'd see them talk in the field. "What are you doing that for? We've gone on a road march, aren't you? Take my advice, get it done." And you just did it automatically without, you know, you followed him. You didn't, if you didn't need talc, "Well, I've got none here, yeah. Get some though." Put a bit on for you and get some. That was a good idea, that, because I don't think I ever had a blister. And I think it was talc, soft socks and talc. If you had rough socks, then you got your blister. Yeah. A loose shoe, if your shoe was a bit loose, you know, it didn't fit tight on your foot.
Presumably you would be excused the next drill and march if your feet were bad. Or did you still have to go?
What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, if you were found with blisters after a march of some kind, did that mean that they were looked after until they cleared before you did more, or do you still have to go out and do your routine?
Not quite, because when you're on training, your feet were examined fairly regularly. You're away on training for a month or something, and you've got something to stick on your blister. The doctor come along, they say, never burst a blister. That's painful all the time, so if you burst it, you get the liquid out. If as long as you do it properly, it doesn't spread on your foot. And the doc or one of the lads from the first aid group would come along and do it for you and stick a plaster on, and then you just put your feet on and you're away with somebody else. You say, "Forget it, you're not noticed there. Forget it." You couldn't forget it, though. You still knew it was there.
You've mentioned this month's training. Mm-hmm. During the training season, what was the training season?
I think during the summer months. You also got bad weather training as well. Towards the end, you'd be out and you'd get soaked. And you got soaked and wet, and it dried on you sometimes.
And during that month, you would go out on these moors that you mentioned earlier and do your training. Did you still come into camp at night before you moved out again, say, the next day, or did you remain out?
No, you were outside all night. You camped out. You kept out. Sometimes you had your ground sheet or something. It was a funny shape. You know, you could wrap around your shoulders.
Like a gas cape.
It wasn't a gas cape. It was just an ordinary cape, but it had a different corner, and you put two together and make a tent for two on the ground. Get a couple of sticks and you can make a little tent for two. Or you could lie on the ground and cover the thing over you, see? On the way. Slept on one of them many times. I underneath one many times. It's not the coldness from here, it's the coldness coming up at the bottom that catches you if you're not careful. You've got to lie on half of it and put the other half of it. Two of you muck in together, lie on one, put the other one over you, keep the dampness off you.
And these would be all tied in with field work?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And manoeuvres. Did you manoeuvre with other units from other regiments?
Occasionally. If I can remember rightly, I think they used to, you didn't manoeuvre with them or anything. You went against them, you know. He was over there and you were over here and you both had to do something. Or you had to get to something before him or do something like that, you know. A little bit of exercise with the two of you, sort of style. You're fighting each other, you know, at distances. It put a bit of interest into training rather than nobody being there when you got there, you know.
How realistic did they make it? I'm thinking in terms of artilleries and mortars and so forth.
They tried to do it as well as they did. They never used, I can't remember them using live ammunition, but they used those cracker things. Used to get them about that big and set the fight and chuck them off. And they made a canny bang, you know. They used to use them a lot. And the little ones that were like automatic firing, you know, about that big, like an automatic going off. And of course, if it was a duel between one regiment and another one, you had umpires out. And if the umpire come along and said, no, dead, you're dead, you're reported back and you got another job. You're never out of it.
You couldn't lie there.
No, you're never out of it. You just had to get out of the road. And you just fit it in somewhere else. You'll be a first aid man carrying stretchers or something the next time, you see, just for practice.
Mm-hmm. Digging trenches, did this come into the routine of training?
I can't remember ever digging any trenches when I was at Cattery. No. We had lectures on how to dig them and how to set them and how to timber them and various things and this, that and the other, but I don't think we ever did any. We did at the after the war started. We did that. Yes, I went on some young officers course or some damn thing the hotel. Catterick is a big hotel on the main road. It's not on the main road now. The main road passes the Scotch Corner Hotel. I was booked in there for 3 days, and we used to opposite the hotel. There's a little road that goes straight down the bottom. We had a course down there. Of young officers and sergeants and all that, and it was an instruction course, and part of that course was about digging a trench, the lay of a trench, the proper lay of a trench. And when I was on the course, that happened to be my piece of work that I had to get on the blackboard and sketch it on the blackboard and tell them all about it. Everybody got a turn in doing something when, you know, you pull a piece of paper out. Well, that happened to be my piece up there, and I think I must have done it so well that I came back every 3 weeks to talk to the squad, the next squad, about it and explain it to them. I come up from Eshwinning. I was stationed at Eshwinning, and car took me down, and I was booked into the hotel overnight down there to do this thing for about four times, I think. When they had the course on, they used to send up for me to go down and do it. So I must have been all right. You know, how you dig the banks, how you put the timber in, if you can get the timber, what you do at the bottom, stop your feet getting wet and all that kind of thing. the extra footstep on the side so you can look over the top, because you've got to walk in these things if you do them properly, like the First World War. You've got to walk in them, but you've also got to fight from them, so you've got to have a step of some sort in the side. And I enjoyed that, going down there.
Were you issued at Catterick with a digging tool? Was it part of your equipment?
No. No, not as far as I remember. No. We were issued in the war. We were issued with a little thing with a pick on one end and a little tiny shovel on the other end. That's what they were trying to dig with in France. We had some of them. Tell you a story about that later on, right, without this.
You said you're relatively free to a degree, obviously, and you could get passes to take you to go home. Did you go home quite often?
Yeah, you could go home when you wanted to. Yes. You just asked for a pass, weekend pass. If there's nothing going on, you got away with it. You just got in the bus and went home, come back. The trouble was getting back on the Sunday night, because the buses run late, and you used to get as far as Easington, and then sometimes you were stuck. I used to go to Seam. Well, I'd get from Seam to Sunderland. I would go the other way, about 3 miles the other way, north, to get a train, and that got me to Darlington. And then I used to get to Darlington somewhere about 11 o'clock at night, so we had to walk from Darlington to Catterick. Or we could stay in the station and catch the milk train and go in that early in the morning. We used to tell the sergeants, yeah, I'm coming in on the milk train on the morning, mind, so don't mark me out. I might be a bit late, depends how the train is. There would be five or six of you, maybe more, from all the camp, you know, maybe a dozen, two dozen, waiting at the milk train instead of marching 6 miles or something like that into Catterick. You wait at the milk train to get in. And you used to stop the train for you to get off.
Had you been given the extra uniforms that you hadn't got at the depot when you came to the battalion?
No. Your dress uniform, you mean? No, you got that at the depot. I mean, I was able to go home from the depot, and I could only go if I got my jacket and trousers and everything to fit me. You say you got them from the tailor. It took a couple of months or more, and if you're a bad lad in the squad, you didn't get your stuff till the last minute, sort of style. You might have one night out in Newcastle. The sergeant used to tell the tailor keep it back, because you couldn't go till you got it. You were in those denim things all the time, you know.
But so you had all the equipment when you moved to
Catterick? You had your full dress equipment and everything. You took your denims, which is your work kit, the trousers and top, all your clothing and everything, and your two suits. You had two suits of khaki jacket and trousers. And you carted them in your kit bag. And by the time you got them out of the kit bag, they were in a heck of a mess. You wanted a nine, but nobody had a nine. You had to sleep on them, put them under the bed and sleep on them. Yeah. You took all them with you.
If you did something wrong in the battalion at Catterick, what kind of punishments were meted out?
Well, of course, the punishment depends on what the offence was, isn't it? You got defaulters. And nobody liked them, because we had a real defaulter sergeant. Oh, was he? Put some more water on. You should stand over here and put some more water on. Pilgrim. Pilmore, they called him. He was a dreadful man. Nobody liked him. Got away late. He didn't get many, because, you know, unless the stupid ones, because he was a dreadful man. He'd done his job, that's all. He never touched you or anything. He'd just put some more water on and do that again, sort of style, you know. He's a real typical sergeant for that job.
In effect, made you repeat what you were doing.
You had to do it really properly to satisfy him.
What kind of defaulters' jobs would be given out?
Oh, I don't know, I never did any. Scrubbing floors and things like that, I should imagine, you know. Carrying coal for the officer's mess or the sergeant's mess. Various things like that. That's all the things were. Or whitewashing those stones around, you know. Around anything, any work to be done at all in there, he got a list of it and he did it. He always had somebody in the cookhouse, always some of the defaulters in the clubhouse, and that's a dirty, greasy job, you know. But he was very thorough with the dog, but nobody liked him at all. They hated the sight of him. If they saw him walking down the road, they'd go in the barrack or get out the road, round the back out the road.
Was he regimental police or provost?
Regimental, just regimental policeman.
Presumably, those that were had done something more seriously wrong would finish up in the guard room.
Yeah. Yes. Oh yes, you went to guard room, and then the colonel decided, the company commander decided whether he could punish you or the colonel. Then the colonel could either punish you or send you further on, put the red caps, hand you over to the red caps.
Was it a relatively happy battalion? Most of these men have been away a long time from their homes.
Yeah. Yes, they had, but they had a good holiday when they came back. Yes, the two squads that came from the depot were in the camp over the Christmas. They were here. Some of them went on leave, you know, for a couple of days, sort of, were back, sort of style. Then they came back. They went away very long when they first got there, and some of them didn't even go at all because they were going long distance. So they stayed in the camp. Then they all had a Christmas and New Year away. They had a fortnight or 3 weeks of Christmas, and we were in the camp looking after the camp at Christmas time. So, you know, the camp was more or less empty.
Were there any problems from men not coming back or coming back late?
Well, you always had them, you know, especially coming into country, because there was no buses in after about 11 o'clock at night. And you always got in the morning. And you were all right as long as you got in before Reveille. You got in before Reveille, nobody said anything. You could report it, or the corporal, your corporal would say, right, I'm reporting what time you come in. So, all right, you report the sergeant, your platoon sergeant, what time you come in. That was fine. He knew about it, and that's all it was. You were there for Reveille, and that's it. You know, that was it. Even if you're a few minutes late, you were there. If you didn't miss any training, you know, you didn't miss your PT and that, you were all right. The sergeants that were very good. I mean, he said, well, look, we've been the same as you. We've done the same as you, sort of style. As long as you're here and you haven't done anything stupid to get here. Well, the milk train, everybody knew about the milk train. And I think British Rail did as well. Used to stop for you near as you could to the camp to get off. They were very good.
What were the sporting activities that were going on?
Well, football was always on, inter-company and inter-platoon football, inter-platoon cricket. We also had racing going on, sports day and racing. There was always two people used to cut their throats, each other's throats, for the 100 yards belt, for the belt. And they were just the two of them used to get in the final. In the final, it was only between them two every year. There's betting going on. Oh dear, mate, it was like a horse racing. Those two, Roy Armstrong, and I can't remember the other one. He was in Cantley. I saw him in Cantley when I worked at the ordnance factory down here, and he got a note about that one of the policemen from here went down there, and they told him I was up here. And he mentioned me name. He remembered me from being at Catrick when he was there at the time, and he asked me to go back down there. Would I go down and do some judging for him at his sports day? Anyway, I had some great fun down there. I'd never seen him for, oh, I don't know, 20, 30 odd years or something like that. You know.
Were the inter-platoon league tables and cup finals thing?
They used to have knockout competitions, if that's what you mean, yes. Inter-platoon knockouts, football.
Did you play against any of the other regiments that were in the camp?
Well, the companies did, and the battalion did. They had the hockey as well. I didn't mention that before. That was a good game, hockey. They had a good hockey team. The band lads platoon had an excellent team for a company in the band. They were very good hockey.
And hockey was quite a game in India, wasn't it?
Yes, it was in Catrick as well, in England. It was a good game hockey and rugby got me coming to England instead of going to China. 1937. I'll tell you when that's up.
The you've mentioned the dining room. Was the food?
Food was quite good.
It was good.
Edible, anyhow. I can't remember any complaints about it. I mean, some days it was, if you didn't like the stuff that was cooked, well, that was too bad. I mean, that's the same now, isn't it? You go to a restaurant, you've got a choice of stuff, and sometimes you don't like any of the things that's on. But you've got to eat. You've got to have something to eat. So. But I've always found the army food quite edible and quite good.
Was there a canteen, Naffy?
Yeah.
On the camp?
Yeah, there were shops as well, just on the edge of the camp. They're still there. Well, they were the last time I was down.
Did you get a pay increase from recruit to trained soldier, in effect?
No, I don't think so.
Still the same pay as you'd start?
Just the same, yes.
There'll be a pay parade, was there not? When did that occur?
Friday.
What did you have to do to get
your
pay?
You lined up for your pay. The officer sat down, the company commander sat down at the desk with the colour sign. He shouted your name out, now much. You went down there, saluted them, took your money, put it in your left hand, stood at attention, saluted again, turned around and went away. There was always somebody watching you, though, doing that. And if you didn't do it, you actually could call you when you went around the back. You know what you did there? You didn't do that correct. You're corporal or somebody, you know. I think it was just to say that he was still a corporal, like, you know, you're still your boss.